Yeah, so I left in 2007, and it was actually pretty hard to leave in 2007 because you all were a lot more judgmental back then. Now I tell people that I was raised polygamist, and they're like, cool, I'm a polyamorous queer witch. And I'm like, that's fun. That's a cool thing to be. And what I was warned about...
Welcome to the Brothers Random Show. My name is Travis.
I'm Michael.
And we are two ordinary brothers discussing extraordinary ideas and some random shit. Our second guest in part two is a comedian. He is a consultant. He is TikTok famous, and you know him as the Fresh King Benjamin. We know him as Ben, our nephew. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, guys. It's great to be back. It's been a long time.
Yeah, we just did one. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Ben, we last time we touched on your kind of growth into well, we didn't even really talk about like getting out of polygamy and then out of the church and things like that. But I kind of wanted to jump right into you had a little bout with atheism, and if you wanted to walk us through kind of that, and then I really wanted to, because you did a TikTok on hijacked worship,
mm-hmm.
and I'd love for you to just kind of take us away on that a little bit.
Yeah. So when I left the LDS church in 2015, and when I left the LDS church, I was pretty done with religion. Right. I basically left two cults at that point, and I was like, fuck this shit, I'm done. And so I went on a little bit of a science bender where I was like, the only thing that I will accept is true are things that I can empirically know are true. Right. So what is empiricism? What does science have to teach me about the world? And I went on this huge kick. I downloaded a ton of like the great courses about science. I listened to stuff from like on evolution, on biology, on the origin of the universe, on physics, on chemistry, literally anything that I could get my hands on for quite a few years. And at that point, I think I would consider myself atheist is kind of a strong term. Cause that feels pretty sure. Right. Like there's no God, there's a big universe. Maybe there's a God somewhere. So I was kind of on that kick for a little bit, and it was really good. Like it was really healthy. It gave me sort of a grounding into this reality that I'm really, really grateful for. And it also gave me a view of humanity that was noble without an appeal to something outside of us. Right. So I was not only was I reading about like some of the more hard science, but I was also reading books by Carl Sagan, by Neil deGrasse Tyson, where they sort of mythologize science, right? They kind of take mm-hmm. science and elevate it to the status of myth. And that's pretty powerful. And, you know, I've sort of viewed the world that way for a number of years, probably 5 or 6 years. And then the way I can best describe it is that sort of felt a little bit stale to me. It felt kind of clinical. Right. It felt like I was living life, like with a lab, like in a laboratory or in a hospital. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, I sort of missed some of the more like, I don't know, some of the magic, some of like the woo, like some of the belief, kind of the myth, right. That I missed having that.
Did you feel like it touched on nihilism a little too much or too close?
No, not really. Because, you know, it's not that I felt that nothing mattered. It did. Cause it's, I mean, if you look out at the universe, even if you say, I only am going to be empiric, right? I'm only going to deal with what I can see. And if you look out at the universe and your conclusion is nothing matters, you're stupid. That's a stupid conclusion, because if science is everything, then we are a fucking miracle. Right? Like just being human on this earth with all of the shit that we have to look at and do is absurdly probabilistic and pretty fucking magic. So if you look at that and you're like, nothing matters, you should probably go to therapy. Because probably what's happening is that you're projecting some trauma onto the universe that's not actually there. But you know, I the way that my brain was wired, right? We were raised in a very mythic home, right? Like very magical. We were talking about this before we started recording, right? Like Mormonism is sort of steeped in the magical worldview and the occult. There's a lot of belief and kind of like woo that's sort of built into who we are. And I kind of missed that, right? It felt, I felt like there was maybe something a little empty. And then I read this really awesome book called Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. And he's a professor of history from Israel. And he writes the subtitle of the book is A Brief History of Humankind. And he traces the history of humanity from our best understandings of their origins up till now. And he kind of explains why did sapiens rise to dominance, right? So turns out that there were other hominid species. That's not something that we were taught, but there were other species of humans, right? There was Homo erectus, there was Homo neanderthalis. So there were all these different hominid species, and sapiens survived and dominated. Why? And it's not, according to Harari, it's not because we were smarter, because Neanderthals actually have a larger brain capacity than we do. It's not because we were stronger or faster or more violent. It's because we were able to cooperate better. It's cooperation that set sapiens apart. And how do sapiens cooperate? What is the thing that enabled us to cooperate so well? And what Harari says is that it's our ability to believe in myths, which is essentially to say it's our ability to believe in things that are not true. People ask all the time, who built the pyramids? And the answer, aliens. Maybe or maybe not, I don't know. But when you really ask the question, what built the pyramids? The answer is pretty simple. Humans that believed that Pharaoh was God. And that belief that Pharaoh was God organized them in a way that allowed them to cooperate so that they could build a pyramid, right? It's the same fucking thing that built the Salt Lake Temple in the middle of a desert while people were starving to death. It's a myth that humans believed that they had to do this so that they could worship God, and then they did it. There's examples outside of religion too. Money is a great example. Money is a myth, right? Money is a made up thing that we all believe in, and because we believe in it, we can cooperate. Language, right? English isn't a thing, right? You can't go out and like dissect English. English is just babbles of sounds that we all collectively have agreed mean something, right? So that book, reading that book, kind of got me thinking, and it sort of changed my orientation, where I started to maybe be open to the possibility that belief wasn't really about what's out there. It's more about what's in here. And that maybe the human brain is actually hardwired for belief. It's hardwired for myth. Because if you think about the context in which the human brain evolved over 250 years of human evolution, we were born into these small, intimate tribes that were very magic, right? That were animistic, that believed that animals and trees and rocks had spirits, that we were surrounded by this unseen world with gods and demons and all of this shit. And that's the world that we lived in, and we died in that world. And so, you know, I started to just kind of think like, maybe belief isn't about God. Maybe belief is about humans, right? Maybe belief is just something that humans do. And when I opened myself up to that possibility, I just started to play with belief. What are beliefs that I like that make me feel good? And so I would like, oh, I'd like, and I, cause I love religion anyway. So I'd study Buddhism, and I'd be like, I really like this idea, this belief from Buddhism. That feels very beautiful to me. That resonates with a part of my soul. Okay, that's mine now. I really like this particular part of Christianity.
Sorry, excuse me.
That's mine now. God bless you. And so then I could kind of construct a belief system that was like, it's sort of like a choose your own adventure a little bit. It's a little smorgasbord where it's like, we can do like, I now have access to this laboratory of human experiment over thousands of years all across the globe with multiple different ways of expressing and approaching the divine and the unknown. And that's pretty magic that I have now, that because what if Christianity doesn't resonate with me? But what if parts of Islam do? And what if I like a little bit of Islam and I like a little bit of Christianity and I like a little bit of Judaism, right? Being able to sort of grab all of those and pull them in and say, hey, this is actually, I can do that, right? Because I'm a sovereign being and I get to construct a belief that works for me, right? That is meaningful to me. And so I was doing that. And then I had a couple of really cool experiences that where I felt like, that's what I wanted in religion. Right. So the first one was it was like a friend's birthday party and she'd brought on this, basically this EDM, artist, and her name was Sarah Solstice. Sarah Solstice is a kind of a new age hippie musical artist. She's from Saturn and she only eats air and light. And for about 5 minutes, she had me convinced that I could probably survive on air and light too. And she had taken some old kind of Christian worship music, some music that I was familiar with, right? And she had put it to EDM music and sort of expressed it in a different way, right? She sang it, but it wasn't like how I'd heard it sung in Christianity. It felt like worship music, where it wasn't like, we're going to go and like fight other people. It was like, we're expressing our connection to the divine. And when I heard her sing, I felt worship in my body. Like the feeling that I felt in my body was, it was awe. It was reverence. It was all those feelings that I was told I would feel in religion that I never felt. And I felt them in my body. And I thought, and it wasn't that I wanted to worship her. It was that I wanted to worship that, right? The thing that was channeling, that was coming through, that she was pointing at, right? The thing that was coming through, I wanted to worship that. And so I fell to my knees and I was crying and I just opened my hands and I just sat and I just worshiped. And what I realized in that moment is that worship had been stolen from me. That worship is actually a very profoundly human experience, right? That being part of something bigger than you and recognizing it and seeing the beauty, seeing your connection to it is a profoundly human experience. And religion, I think, has stolen that from humanity because they've taken that human experience and they've said, actually, that's ours. We control that. And if you want access to that, you have to give us 10% of your money and not masturbate. And that is bullshit, right? They've stolen it from people. And not only have they stolen it, they've then ruined it. They've stolen it and then they've ruined it for people because they've given them a toxic and an abusive experience with worship and religion, where originally it was just very human. And then I went to Burning Man, which I would describe as the opposite of religion in every way, but also sort of the true human religion, where it was very festival, very celebratory, very, very pagan. And, but it's basically a bunch of people wandering around the desert for a week, being human, being creative, worshiping, having fun, partying, like getting all of this energy out and then cleaning it up and then moving on. And that felt like when I went there, I was walking around at Burning Man and I was like, oh, this is Babylon. Like this is the Babylon that I was warned about. And turns out Babylon is profoundly human. Turns out Babylon is pretty fucking rad because Babylon has a way of worshiping that is that is inclusive, that allows all parts of humanity to be expressed, that doesn't force humanity down to this really narrow expression that is really not suitable for anyone.
I had a similar experience. Growing up, I always felt like my love for rock and roll was like that there was no place in the religion,
right,
for my love of rock and roll.
Oh, yeah. Right? And yeah. What's more human, what's more soulful than rock and roll, man?
Yeah, and that's the thing is like we were fed kind of this story that the people out there, that all the people out there were evil.
Right.
And that we must not partake in that, all those people out there.
Things. Right.
The sinful
things.
Don't
go listen to the music of the Gentiles, or it will take you down into sin and perdition.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but I go to a Shinedown concert and I had a spiritual experience with, and quasi-religious, really. I mean, really, I'm sitting there and I'm just like, how is this not spiritual? How is this not religious? And, right. And same thing, tears came down my face, and I felt love for everyone there.
Yeah. Right?
It was just this kind of love that poured out of me for everyone at this, and I thought of our Travis and mine, our brother that has passed away, who also loved rock and roll,
right.
You know, and yeah, felt this love. Yeah. That just kind of poured out, for the people there. Yeah. Right. And
there's this moment where you kind of realize, like, what if all of the things that I was told were evil are actually God? Right? What if the rock and roll is God? What if the sex is God? What if the drugs are God? Right? What if all of these human experiences that I was told were evil, that's actually not the evil. The evil is calling things evil.
What about the excesses of those, though? You can argue that those actually, like, so Diltz, I don't know if you listened to our interview with him, he actually said that by the fruits of those things. So I'm not saying that you're not right, but anything to an extreme will also 100%. Ruin your life.
I just don't think that people take things to an extreme because of those things. They take things to an extreme because they're trying to heal some inner wound, because they were told that those things were evil, right? Like as an example, right? My kids, I don't drink a ton of alcohol. Actually, I don't like alcohol that much. But if I'm drinking something, like if I'm having a glass of wine and my kids are like, oh, can I have some of that wine? I'm like, absolutely. Here, have a sip. And they'll smell it. Oh, God. It's its own regulation.
Yeah.
Right.
But fair enough. But if I'm like,
no, never do it. And also you drop it back. Right. Then it creates this like, ooh, this is bad. Right. It creates kind of this spiral. And Michael, to your rock and roll point, so have you ever heard the song Unconditional by Arcade Fire?
I don't know.
there's this really great stanza that I just want to read, because it kind of connects to what you said, but it says, look out, kid, trust your soul. It ain't hard to rock and roll. You know how to move your hips, and you know God is cool with it. But some people want the rock without the roll, but we all know there's no God without soul.
Some people want the rock without the roll.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
That's pretty good.
That there's something, there was something magical about realizing not only is God not mad about all of these human things that we do, God, whatever God is, God is cool with that shit. right? God's at these Shinedown concerts going, fuck yeah. Right? God's at country music concerts going, whatever yeah. they do it. Yeehaw!
Yeehaw!
You know, like that God is actually, what if God isn't our enemy, right? What if God isn't our judge? What if God is delighted in us? What if God is just waiting to see what we do? And whatever it is that we do, he's going to be like, ha, 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 that's cool.
Or ha, ha, consequences.
I mean, like.
We talked about this a little bit. We Travis and I on one of our episodes talking about that God might be much less of a big guy in the sky getting after people, but more that people who go against that go against the God of nature in a sense. Will that there's just going to be consequences to that.
Yeah. Well, and even like, I agree with that, but also maybe let me maybe tweak it a little bit the way that I see it, because it's not, I don't think of consequences, right? I think there's experience, right? And I think that religion often vilifies experience, and it tries to get you to not have experience. And by doing so, it forces you to remain a child. Right? Because what is a child? A child is someone who hasn't had experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you have experience, some of those experiences will be good. And some of those experiences will not be good. Some of those experiences you will like, and some of those experiences you will not like, right? That's where those kind of consequences come in. If you go out and you party hard and you rage and you get blackout drunk, and then you wake up in a bed with someone that you're like, oh, I can't believe I did that. That's some pretty valuable experience. And if you take experience, if you're not afraid of experience, but if you embrace experience and then reflect on your experiences, I think that's what makes you wise. And I think that in religion, we have a dearth of wisdom because we have a lack of experience. Like think about the people that you trust that you would go to for advice. They've done some shit,
mm-hmm.
right? They've mm-hmm. lived life, and that's why you trust them, because they know what they're talking about. Some dude that's never done anything, you're not going to go ask that person for advice. They've been sitting in their house their whole time.
Yeah.
Which isn't me saying go out and do all of the drugs and drink all of the alcohol and ruin your life, because I don't actually think that that's fun. I don't actually think that that is the way that humans want to be. I'm just saying, you know, live a little, right? Make some mistakes. Mistakes are fine. Fuck it up. That's what your 20s and your 30s are for. And then learn from that, gain wisdom, and then step into your later adult life as a wise, powerful human, not as someone who's like, I don't know, because I've never really done anything. So I don't really know what it is that I like and I don't like. No, figure it out. Do some shit. Try whatever that thing is that you're just like, ooh, I could never do that. Go do that thing.
Hmm.
See how it feels.
Yeah.
I think we're touching on this the story of Footloose.
I still haven't seen Footloose.
You still what? Haven't seen Footloose?
No. Oh my gosh. You've been off the compound for how long?
And there are a lot of movies, and I was married and had little kids. So
yeah.
So in essence, Footloose, there was a car full of teens that had been drinking. They went to a dance and crashed and they passed away. And therefore the town banned all
drinking dances,
drinking, dancing,
and which then exacerbated the problem. Right. Because here's the thing there too. Right. Cause it's not, cause there's also like, there's individual wisdom and there's also collective wisdom. What if they could have as a town collectively reflected on their experience? Cause like, Do you think teenagers want to die in car crashes because they're drunk?
No.
No. That's not what they want to do. So rather than like this tight control, we're gonna burn. Just like, okay, let's talk about this, right? I don't know that it's gonna be perfect, but like when my kids start doing crazy shit, which I fully expect that they will do, and I actually want them to, right? That's what teenagers are for. Teenagers are supposed to go out and break shit and do crazy shit and freak the parents out because they're pushing the edges of what's possible. So hopefully they do that in a way that doesn't kill them. But if it does, you know, their genes weren't supposed to get passed on. And that's just evolution keeping the herd here.
That's evolution keeping the stupid people from keeping
poor big guy people. In the sky consequences.
Right?
Consequences.
Like, you know,
I don't know.
there's some value there. I just think that
point, Jordan Peterson talks about letting boys skateboard. He uses that as the analogy. They're pushing their limits. Let them skateboard. Let them push those limits.
Let them do it. And let's recognize that part of that is going to be fucking up. And let's allow teenagers to fuck up and not vilify and call them stupid and just be like, okay, just be there with them when they do. Oh, that's interesting. How did that feel? How are you doing? Are you okay? Okay. How can I support you now? Right? What if that was our orientation towards teenagers is you're going to fuck up. You're supposed to fuck up. I'll help and support you when you do. Rather than never fuck up. And if you do, we'll ban dancing from the town.
Yeah. Back to your point about the or when you were given the
right. When I'm kind of like, here, would you like some wine?
Would you like some wine? So I don't know where I heard the statistic, but isn't like people who actually have alcoholic parents, they become alcoholics. How do you square that with that idea? Now I'm not saying anything against what you did, and I agree. Maybe it corrects itself, but what if you do that and there is a kid who has a propensity for alcohol abuse and they become alcoholics as a result of being that free with that kind of situation?
I mean, so I think there's a big difference between being an alcoholic and being like, hey, have some beer, and being like, I'm having some beer right now. I'm an adult. This is an adult drink. As a child, you are welcome to have a sip. Would you like a sip?
Yeah.
Right. Those are two. I think one of those is probably going to turn your kid into an alcoholic. The other one isn't. And it's not because of the alcohol. It's because of the way that you're oriented towards it and the way that it's being delivered. Right. It's about the experience that's happening.
Okay. Yeah. I would,
to be clear, I'll just say, they say this on the podcast. I don't think kids should be drinking. I think it's bad for them. Yeah. I don't think kids should be like, what I'm telling my kids is, hey, your brain is developing until you're 25. Probably don't do anything mind altering until you're then, then. And then when you want to come chat with me and we'll do it together.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's the going average for alcoholics. They become alcoholics at a young age. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point. That's a good point. And, I think I still kind of attribute all the stuff that the church teaches kind of as a kind of a shield against the excesses of humanity. Right. But I think it's overcorrected. So I think that's when it was invented. I think it started that way, but it's overcorrected to the point that they're, so let's take, for example, the church teaches against rated R movies, right? And as an adult, I did a lot of studying in movies, and I discovered that the process in which getting rated R movies out there or to not be rated R is completely arbitrary. It is somebody pays somebody a little bit more and you get a PG-13 rating as opposed to R rating. And I always use this as an example. Conspiracy theory and Titanic came out the same year. Conspiracy Theory had $60 million budget. Titanic had a $200 million budget. And Titanic has 3 F-bombs, violence, a nude scene, a sex scene, and it's PG-13. Whereas Conspiracy Theory has one scene of violent, heavy violence, and I think one F-bomb. It was rated R, and Titanic was PG-13. So yeah. The difference was the budget. And I've always said that that's a completely arbitrary, that doesn't have anything to do. Yet from the pulpit of the church in 1987, there was a general official who said, don't watch rated R movies. I think what he was trying to get at was don't put filth into your mind.
Right.
What ended up happening is it became dogmatic. And now a staunch Mormon, it does not go see. Right. I know people who've never seen a rated R movie in their life.
What's funny about that is that we will take Mormon teenagers who have never seen rated R movies, and then we'll send them to the Dominican Republic, which is a rated R movie.
As missionaries, we send them to the Dominican Republic.
Here, go to developing nations where people die in front of you.
Yeah.
And then we're like, why are they coming back with PTSD? So I like that a lot, Trav. And I also think that, like, was there really nothing more important that God could have revealed to his prophets, seers, and revelators in 1987 in America than don't watch rated R movies? Like, is that really the best? Maybe like, I don't know, buy Apple.
Well, what if they did? What if that's all that one?
That's
one,
where all that came from.
That's where all that bill. What was it?
$150 billion.
Oh, I mean, that's where it comes from.
Damn it! You know, here's what I will say. I've said a lot of mean things about the LDS Church. That's not true. I've said a lot of true things. I'm never mean. I'm only true. and. I've said a lot of true things that could be construed as mean. I will say one very nice thing, which is that I absolutely do not want the LDS Church to be managing my salvation. But if they would manage my 401k, I would be all over that shit.
That sounds like a joke you're working on.
Because in 150 years, they went from fucking broke to pretty fucking rich. And that's impressive. Like, I don't know that the Catholics have anything on that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think if we looked it up, I don't think the Catholics Church, which has been around
for thousands of years,
for almost 2000 years.
I think their net worth with all their is in the trillions. I think they might be worth $1 trillion.
Oh, well, they're catching up.
And they've had a long time to like build a lot of really gold cathedrals. And plus the Pope's crown is probably like $16 billion just by itself.
Have you done any research or looking into Scientology at all?
Ooh, I've watched a couple episodes of like the Leia Remini stuff. And
yeah,
I watched Going Clear.
The correlation between L. Ron Hubbard and Joseph Smith is really fascinating.
Huge. In fact, I think that Joseph Smith, if he would have been alive today, might not have been a cult leader. He might have just been a fantasy writer.
Or he would have been a tech billionaire.
Or a tech billionaire.
A psilocybin seller.
He would have invented seer stones that you could actually talk to.
One thing that struck me when it was Lex Fridman had a guy on that was from Scientology, and he was saying something about Scientology only being like 35,000 strong, and that blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was kind of just like, whoa, wait a minute, and we're talking about the LDS Church being, I mean, they say 16 million, But I mean, the
it's probably about 4 million active.
Oh, you think so? That low?
That's or... the most of the estimates that I've seen are around that. Because I mean, let's be real. They baptize whoever the fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then they're on the records. They're
baptizing dead people multiple times.
And then you could have an 8-year-old baptized, never right. active for the rest of their life, and they still might right. be on those books. So right.
I know people who hate the church who are still on the rolls.
And
so but that it just kind of baffled me to think that Scientology we hear about so much and they are so small
right
in comparison.
So I believe, and tell me what you think about this, Benjamin, I believe that Scientology is in the stage that LDS Church was in before polygamy. I think if Scientology gets rid of their more nefariousness that and then become legitimized, they'll go pew, mainstream yeah. like the LDS Church did, because what the LDS Church had to do was get rid of some of their doctrine, and then yeah. they went mainstream.
Well, and you can even look at, if you look at the leader, like the prophets of the LDS Church, right? You'll see there's Joseph Smith, and then there's bearded dude, David O. McKay, 1950, clean shaven. Everyone else is clean shaven. And that's the moment when the LDS Church went, okay, we have a PR issue. And they went hardcore into managing that. And they did, they kind of popped. They've done a great job, right? That's one of, they've done a really great job kind of passing themselves off as like nice and polite and fun and happy and ha ha ha, like Mormons are cute. And that sort of, I think, is sort of hidden some of the more nefarious and some of the darker parts of the underbelly. And I think that I agree, Trav. I think Scientology hasn't quite figured that out yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they would be a cult that would go mainstream if they got rid of like,
it's also probably a little harder to go like, it's got to kind of suck to have your like Joseph Smith era during a time when there are cell phones.
Yeah. Cause then people can find out the truth, right?
Cause people can find out the truth and they can record you doing dumb shit. Like if there was been a cell phone on Joseph Smith, no one would follow that dude today. We'd be like, that guy's a crazy bot.
Also, do you think it would have been as popular had Joseph Smith not been murdered? What do you think?
You know, I'm that's an interesting question. I definitely think it, like Brigham Young definitely put his own kind of unique flavor on it. Right. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely given them a martyr.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting, interesting thing to say to about someone who died in a gunfight armed.
Oh, was he? I've never heard that.
He did have a gun.
He had a gun and he shot people right before he died.
So which, probably
like, I just want to be clear. I don't condone storming jails and killing people. Right. Like we should not do that. But I also think that if the dude that you're storming the jail to kill has a gun and kills some of you, that dude wasn't martyred. That dude died in a gunfight.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I did.
Let me ask you this, Ben, because we had Nathan Diltz on, and we kind of asked him a question, and Nathan, he basically just said, I'm not going to be an apologist, right? But he kind of said, by their fruits you shall know them, right. And he kind of felt like that Mormonism in general had done a lot of good. And so if you, and you made the claim that the church has done immense harm.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to talk a little bit about where you feel like what immense harm you think that is. And then maybe even if there's any good things that you can actually, see that have.
I think that I think that the LDS Church has done immense harm to people of color. I think it has done immense harm to people who are queer. I think it has done immense harm to women. I think it has done immense harm to men by breeding them to be narcissists and to believe that feelings in their belly is God talking to them. I think it's done immense harm to children by telling them that their bodies are bad. I think it's done immense harm to the native population by telling them that their skin is brown because God cursed them. And then by using that to come to Utah and commit genocide against them. So, like, has it also helped some people who had their houses blown down by hurricanes? Totally. Great. Good job. I'm proud of you for doing that. So has other organizations. So has it donated money to charity? Yeah. In 20 years, it donated $25 million to charity towards the end of the 20th century. In that same period, it spent $25 million building a mall in Salt Lake City. I think the LDS Church does immense harm by funneling money into space castles with $10,000 chandeliers so that God can come hang out in the celestial room when there are people who are starving in Utah.
Yeah, it feels a lot like the Catholic Church. They were giving, what was it? What did they call them? Indulgences? Where they basically, you'd pay them to, so you could go sin, essentially. So you could be forgiven of your sin at, you know, after the fact or whatever.
Right. I think that, you know, the LDS Church is obviously, I think that the current leadership of the LDS Church is probably really trying hard to do good. I think that in their hearts, they want to do good. And I think it's really difficult to do good when you are running an institution that was built on a lie and a con. Because Joseph Smith was a fucking liar. He said that God and Jesus appeared to him. Well, first he said that an angel appeared to him. And then he said that it was actually God. And then he was like, actually it was God and Jesus. And then he said, actually it was God and Jesus and Satan. So he kind of kept, the story kept getting better. He said that he found a book of golden plates in the dirt and translated that using a rock and a hat. And that was not true. He lied about that too. He said that an angel appeared to him to force him to marry teenage girls. And that was either a lie, either that's a lie, or it's true and Mormon God sucks. Because if Mormon God has angels that he sends to tell people to do things, and he had access to that angel in 1830s America, why the fuck did he send it to Joseph Smith to say, hey, go bang that 14-year-old, and not, I don't know, the president of the United States to say, hey, maybe don't commit genocide against the native population? Or maybe to every owner of a slave to say, hey, let those people go or I'll kill you, right? If God if there's a God that intervenes in human affairs and sends angels to issue death threats to get people to take action, I don't think that he's going to use it to get Joseph Smith some teenage pussy.
Yeah, I think we've covered this before on the podcast where for me, it's more of a God who doesn't intervene, gives people their agency. Yeah. I think that's probably where God is at. And we've heard people talk about that a lot. You know, the agency needs to be, so the atrocities of the world, like slavery and like the Holocaust, those are perpetuated by people, and God has no hand in it now. But God is giving people choices to make. Are you on the side of the abolitionists? Are you on the side of the American army who came in and stopped the Nazis?
Right.
Like, are you on that side, or are you the Nazis, or are you the slave owner?
Right. And on that, right. Like, you know, Michael, to your, yeah. And I would be interested to hear what Nathan thinks the Mormons have done that's good, right? Like, what is the good? And how does it, and how much does it outweigh? Because also what you find is that Mormons are historically way behind everyone else, right? So the Mormons weren't abolitionists. They owned slaves. The Mormons weren't pro integration. They were saying things up until the 60s and 70s, things like the Negro will never integrate with the white race, right? That is not only harmful, that's white supremacy.
Yeah.
Right. And they're behind the curve on the queer issue as well. So it's almost like any of the good that they do, they have to be dragged kicking and screaming into the present. And finally they'll do it. Right. So in 1978, God changed his mind about black people. How the fuck is that a prophetic organization? 1978? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Everyone had done it at that point.
Well, and it's interesting because it makes you wonder if the religion hadn't given justification for the white supremacy, if they would have come into it quicker.
Right.
So if it wasn't integrated into the religion, like yeah. Catholicism, it's not integrated into Catholicism that I'm aware of.
Right.
Because in Catholicism, they believe the individual, the divinity is somewhere in the individual. They do not believe in a collective. As far as I can tell, Christianity in general is like that. And that's why so many abolitionists were highly religious people.
Right.
But they weren't Mormons.
They weren't Mormons, right? And that's the thing too. Like people, I was listening, people love to give Joseph Smith credit. They'll be like, Joseph Smith was anti-slavery. Sure, he was. He was pro gradual emancipation. How revolutionary. How prophetic. Let's slowly let these people that we kidnapped and abused, let's slowly let them go and compensate the people who stole them.
Yeah.
Wow, what a great moral character. Whoa, what an amazing dude. I want to follow that guy. Well, when there were actual people at that time, not later, everyone's like, oh, they're a product of their time. Okay, there were actual humans in 1830s America who were like, we are not going to support businesses that deal in slavery, that would voluntarily impoverish themselves, freeing slaves. Those people are on they deserve our moral gratitude. Not the people who were like 20 years after the Civil Rights Act were like, now we will let black people have the priesthood.
Yeah. And what's interesting, right. What's interesting about like John Adams, I don't know, the forefather, he was one of the few that didn't own slaves, and he doesn't get enough credit for that.
Right.
He worked his own farm.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of admiration for him, and in that show, that HBO show is so excellent so about great. Him. Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah. So that's the thing, right? There were people at the time who were doing the right thing. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And for us as Mormons we have this myopic view as Mormons that we're the best, right? We're the most, and we're all of this stuff. And yeah. For us to kind of, to assert that Mormons are good. Mormonism is a good force in the world. Okay. Maybe, but if it is, it's microscopic. And does it outweigh all of the harm? And you just like, I just feel like if Mormonism was just like, hey, we're just another Christian religion and we're just doing our thing, right?
Which I think is where they're going to go to.
I think that's where they're trying to move, right?
They're trying to move to.
Right. Yeah. I would hold that. I would be like, okay, cool. You get a little bit of a pass on this. But if the claim that you make is, we are the one true church and we are led by God's mouthpiece on earth, then you better be fucking prophetic. right? You better actually do some shit, right? You better be the ones in the 1830s saying, hey, hey, let's not kill all the natives. Let's let the black people go. Let's let women vote. Let's not send crazy people into like dungeons and then spray them with water. Yeah. Right? If you're going to be prophetic, which is why I'm proud to announce on this show that when Russell Nelson dies, which will probably be tomorrow because he's 97, I am going to challenge his successor, Dallin Oaks, to a prophecy off, because I also claim to be the prophet of the Mormon religion. And when that happens, we will both, the challenge that I will give him is that we will both make 10 prophecies about things that will happen in the next year. And whoever is the most right after a year gets to be the one in charge and gets to have all the money.
And you'd probably win because you know how to use the internet.
Right. I would just Google what's probably going to happen in 10 years, in a year. And then I'd be like, these 10 things. And then he would say the gays will finally go away and women will cover their shoulders.
No, yeah. No chance. Well, actually, women might cover their shoulders. We are becoming a more puritanical
society. We are going kind of going that direction. So
we're going in a weird. When was the last thing? When was the last time you saw breasts in a movie?
Damn it. That's why I left the compound, was so I could watch rated R movies with boobies.
Yeah, but that's going,
bring,
man.
Bring back the boobies.
on that note, we need to start wrapping up. I think we have a lightning round of questions that we'd like to give you. Michael, did you have anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I don't think so. No, I guess. Oh, let me ask this. This was actually from a book that was really interesting. And I'll just kind of build up the premise and then ask you it towards the LDS Church. And in the premise of the book, it's the Last Templar is the name of the book. Mm-hmm. And basically the Templars back in the day were basically fighting against the Catholic Church, right? And the Catholic Church was sovereigning itself over everybody else, and they didn't want to do these things, et cetera, et cetera. So they're kind of fighting against the Catholic Church, and they were going. They spoiler for the book is that they create a document that would prove against the divinity of Jesus Christ. And they did it so that they could bring the Catholic Church down.
Sweet.
Now the
I think Jesus, by the way, would be totally down with that.
Well, the premise of the book is that at the time these Templars did not believe that the Catholic Church could be a force for good in the world.
Right.
And it fast forward to nowadays, and it shows that in a sense, the Catholic Church is a force for good in the world. And
I mean, as long as you're not a boy.
Okay. Yeah. That's the premise is that right. Now the Catholic Church doesn't need to be brought down.
Right.
Right. So, and I don't know, but like, I mean, maybe, you know, getting people, maybe the LDS Church getting people to bring their life to Christ in the sense, you know, stop their drinking and their abuses. And maybe you would disagree with this, but I'm thinking that, you know, maybe there is a,
yeah, is there a
force for good and yeah. Therefore doesn't need to be brought down.
I actually right? I love this question. So, cause it sounds like what you're asking me is there space in my world for the LDS Church being a force for good?
Sure. Yeah.
I think absolutely yes. And that, in fact, that's my ideal result from everything that I do is that they do that. because, and let me explain why I think that's actually a real distinct possibility. First, I think that the point of the purpose of the LDS Church, to be clear, is not to bring people to Christ. It's to get people to pay tithing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of the LDS Church, is to get people to pay tithing. Everything that they do is oriented towards getting them to pay that money. Because in order to be exalted, in order to really make it into tippy top Mormon heaven, you have to go to the temple. Or go to the temple, you have to be a full tithe payer. So it's actually, so that's what I think is actually going on at the core there, is it's a corporation. It's designed to suck up as much money as possible. Now I actually think they could do a shit ton of good with that money, because $150 billion is a ton of money, and they could do some really, like, they could end poverty in the United States with that money. They could build a public transit system in Utah that would be rad and would make my ride to the comedy club much easier, which would be great. Here's what I think would have to happen. I think they would have to own their shit and apologize. Because, like, a person, do I think people can be forces for good? Yeah. Once you own your shit and apologize. So I actually have a list. I've got a list of demands. I've written up a list of demands, and I've.
What's the thesis that Luther wrote?
Yeah, the 95 theses.
The 95 theses.
It's kind of like that. I don't have quite that many. I think I have like six or seven. But essentially, it's like this. It's like, once the LDS Church does this, I will stop being mean to it. I will stop saying that it's a bad organization. And it's pretty simple. It's apologize for the racism, the sexism, the homophobia, and all of the harm that it's caused. Fund the survivors and pay for their therapy. Immediately put women in 50% positions of power and people of color in positions of power. Apologize to the Native population for not only displacing and murdering some of them, but also for the abominable and disgusting lie that they told about those people, that they were descended from white Jews from Israel and then were turned brown because they were wicked.
Yeah, that, right? doesn't give anybody a road to forgiveness when you link bad
their skin color to their wickedness.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just fucking white supremacy, right? It's
Okay. I had another question for you.
Well, let me just finish answering Michael's. Mm-hmm. Because if it were to do that, what that would mean is that the leadership has recognized where they've messed up. And then at that point, I would love to have the LDS Church to actually be what they say they are and to be an advocate for good and to use their power and their, what if all these missionaries that they were sending out weren't to, like, basically brainwash vulnerable people into their cult, but instead they were going out and helping people, right? What if they were going out and building infrastructure and wells and, like, I don't know, like, there's so much good that they could be doing, but they're so focused on maintaining their image of perfection and never admitting that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, because of that, they're going to keep being wrong.
So how do you feel a follow up to that, I guess, is like, then how do you feel about reparations? Because,
oh God, we should immediately pay that. I can't even believe that's a discussion.
Because it sounds
to me like I want reparations from the LDS Church for stealing my tithing. If I'm pissed as fuck that my ancestor got bamboozled into a cult, and then I don't know how many generations that is. 8 generations of our family donated 10% of our income and our wealth to a cult that has used that to enrich themselves. That pisses me the fuck off. I cannot imagine how pissed I would be if the story that actually happened was, for 400 years, my family was enslaved. And then we were released, and then everyone was like, now you're free, have fun, and never talk about it again, and never remind us, and never ask for anything. Oh my God, that's disgusting. And to be clear, like with the reparations thing, that's not going to come out of our pockets, right? Because where that wealth went is into the wealthiest pockets of the United States. The United States' wealth was built on the backs on two things: on exploiting labor from Africans and stealing land from natives. And most of that wealth isn't in my pocket or your pocket or your pocket. Most of that wealth is in the top 1% of the wealthiest of this country. That money has been stolen, and I believe deserves to go back to the people that it was stolen from.
But in a situation like that, how would you even, because there's people who are mixed race now. So like, how would you even,
we can figure the shit out. We went to the moon. We can figure out how to dole out reparations in an equitable way.
Well,
people, we do that all the time with class action lawsuits.
Well, California is trying to do it right now, and you can't even, California wasn't a slave state. So the majority of the people that would be getting those reparations weren't even slave, didn't even have descendants of slaves.
But that's not true, because if you're black in America and you, it doesn't matter if you live in California now, your ancestors were slaves, right? It's the generational impact of that. I just, the thing that blows my mind is that, like, I leave Mormonism, right? I leave this worldview. I leave all of these things that I was told a certain thing. And then I come back and I look at our country kind of fresh. Like, one of the things that I'm sort of grateful for is I've got this sort of this fresh perspective, because everything I was taught was a lie. I now have to approach and look at things as new. Okay. So if I look at American history, there are only two things that I feel like we should be talking about, because there are two original sins. There are two things that we did as a country that were catastrophically horrible. And it's, we enslaved a race, and we committed genocide against another race. We did that shit, right? Like, not me, but America, right? The United States of America enslaved people and then kicked other people off their land and fucking murdered them.
Have you read Thomas Sowell's Quest for Comic Justice?
Mm-mm.
That would be a good read to figure out that issue.
Yeah.
But I don't think we need to belabor it anymore. It's been great, Benjamin. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thanks for, I've had a lot of fun chatting, and thanks for laughing at some of my jokes and asking great questions. And
Before we end this, I also wanted to ask you, like, what are your inspirations comically? Like, who do you really like?
I really love Louis C.K. I'm bummed that he ended up being gross.
Just gross.
Just phenomenal comedian.
Have you watched any of his new stuff? Because I actually have.
I actually watched the thing that he did right after he got busted. Uh-huh. And it's there are levels, right? I don't want to give what Louis did was gross, right? Like, yeah. Read the room.
Yeah.
All right, ladies, like, I'm going to jerk off. Right. If you don't want to watch, get out.
Yeah, right. That is, if you want. Now, here's the thing. I think that it's fine to jerk off in front of people if they're cool with it, right? But the way that you get there, you gotta build to that, right? You gotta you gotta wine and dine them. You gotta see if they're into you. Ideally, they have to not be people that are working for you or touring with you. Ideally, they're not your colleagues. They're like people that you met. And that's the thing too, is like, dude, Louis, like, you really couldn't have gone out and found someone to jerk off in front of. Like, it had to be the comedians that you were touring with who looked up to you as a mentor. Gross, dude. Just fucking gross.
Yeah.
And
consequences.
Fucking. Yeah. I mean, he fucked around and he found out. Right.
Yeah.
As he should have. And comedically fucking brilliant. Like, just, he's just a genius. I love Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle is probably my top.
He's considered by everybody to be the best comic, living comic right now. Like all comics think that he is the best comic.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He has the just remarkable ability to be funny, whatever it is that he's talking about. So he doesn't have to, he just talks and he's that good. Right. I love Michelle Wolf. I love, Taylor Tomlinson. My recent new favorite is a guy named Sam Morril, who's like this like Brooklyn Jew, who's like skinny and just fucking funny. So that's kind of who I'm taking inspiration from. And then the ever comedic and hilarious, Prophet Joseph Smith.
That gives you all your material. just a quick follow-up, to that, do you think that you've maybe painted yourself into a corner? Because if this really takes off and maybe you get like a special, that'd be like the ideal. Do you think that as you circulate material, that you might have to go away from the material about Mormonism?
Oh, 100%. I fully expect to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. So what I'm doing now, the strategy that I have right now is niching down. So there's a really, that was one of the fun things about my show on Sundays that kind of confirmed this. There's a very large and I think hungry audience of ex-Mormons who are ready to laugh about their experience in Mormonism. So I'm in Utah. I can tap into that market. I can probably make some good money while I'm doing that. And I can sort of cut my chops because I'm still new, right? I haven't even been doing this for 2 years. So getting a lot of shows in Utah where I get the experience of being funny in front of people, that's kind of what I want to do. And then from there, I kind of want to step out of Utah. And from there, I think that there's a broader appeal because it's not just about Mormonism, then it's about cults or extreme religion. And I think that's something that does have broader appeal. So it's sort of like you go deep to then go wide. So I'm going deep with this right now to kind of get my, because I know that there's value there. I know that I can speak to that audience, right? I know that I've got something to offer them. Yeah. So kind of niching down into there, becoming known as that. And then, I'd also like to do there's Mormonism is in high demand in the entertainment world right now, right? Like, I don't know how many shows there were last year about Mormonism, but it was at least a dozen.
Yeah.
The Book of Mormon musical, $500 million.
Yeah. In revenue. And that's, isn't that damn near 20 years old now?
Yeah. That's been going for a while. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for a comic who has a background in that to kind of speak and sort of explain Mormonism to the people who don't know about it and to give a voice to the people in Mormonism who feel a little ostracized. And then there are other things there are going to be other things that I'm interested in that I want to talk about and that I will, and it'll sort of kind of like I'm starting from where I am and then I'm going to build out from there.
Cool. And we wish you all the best because what you're doing is really awesome, I think. And I'm really looking forward because eventually I hope to make it down to or over to Salt Lake to actually watch your show.
Oh, that'd be fun. We have a riotous good time. Yeah. Lots of loud laughter. And sometimes we speak ill of the Lord's anointed.
Often. So here's our lightning round. And we're still kind of working this out, but
I'm excited.
Either a book you're reading now or a book recommendation.
Ooh, I have it right here. Stop Caretaking, The Borderline or Narcissists, How to End the Drama and Move On with Your Life.
Oh,
this is a fantastic book for anyone who is in a relationship with a borderline or a narcissist, which I call a BIPNIP. And it's just a great introduction to what those personality disorders look like and then how to navigate relationships with basically high drama people.
Huh. Interesting.
This is a book that basically gave me the tools to not only, because I'd already sort of stepped out of my marriage, but I was still wrapped up in this drama triangle with my ex. And this book gave me the tools to kind of be like, nope, we are done So I fully kind of removed her from my life, and it's been magic.
Cool. Cool. A movie recommendation for one you saw recently.
I just saw Dungeons and Dragons, and it was so fun. I it was like stupid and hilarious and like comical and just a really great introduction to the world of Dungeons and Dragons, especially if you've like ever been interested in like role playing. It kind of gives you an idea of how you might do that, and highly recommend it. It was stupid fun.
Cool. Is there anything from your polygamous life that is now a net positive?
Ooh, 100%. I know how to survive an apocalypse. I think there are a number that we could even spend a long time talking about this. This isn't very lightning, but I think the thing that what polygamy really gave me was a view. Well, actually, I'm going to say this. It gave me the opportunity to be profoundly wrong about something. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful.
Because of the lessons you learned from being wrong?
The lessons that I've learned from being wrong, and also just the humility to know that I can be fucking wrong. Like, not just a little bit wrong. I can be entirely wrong. And that keeps me kind of grounded, right? Like, knowing that, I take myself a little less seriously.
Michael, do you got anything to add to that?
Your favorite movie that you've seen, that's been added to just your favorite movies, I guess, after having gotten off the compound?
Breakfast Club.
Oh,
the John Hughes film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I get
pumping his fist.
Yeah.
Was that because you didn't have that experience?
I think it was because it was just I'd asked some people like some shows that I should watch, and everyone kind of recommended that as like a classic. Yeah. And it was just like, it was just fun, right? It was cool to kind of see a different way of being a teenager, and sort of that was kind of like celebrated, and just like teenagers being teenagers, like being in detention and being stupid and getting in trouble and doing that. And that was okay.
Yeah. I didn't see that. I can't even remember when I saw that first, but that's interesting. So I guess we'll wrap that up. Thank you, Benjamin, again for your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll see what the future brings. I really want to try making it down there sometime to see your show. Is there any?
I'm going to try and get up to some places up there too. So as I'm building out a tour, we'll see.
Oh, cool.
See if I can get that would be awesome. Place close.
Yeah. You're anywhere online that people can find your work. Yeah,
they can find me on. I'm at The Fresh King Benjamin on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And my website is thefreshkingbenjamin.com. And there you can like buy some stuff from me. You can hire me to be a comedian stripper, and you can like sign up for my email list and stuff. You can also join my cult, which I'm starting pretty soon. I'm going to start a monthly membership where it's $6.66 a month, where I will be your prophet. So really just a screaming discount.
Is that diet cult or cult light?
It's diet cult. Yes.
Okay. Michael, what are ours?
Yeah. We're Twitter at Brothers V Random, YouTube at Brothers Random, Rumble. We're on Rumble, The Brothers Random, Instagram is at The Brothers Random.
We're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and most places you can find podcasts. We are wrapping it up. This has been part two of our two-part series with our nephew Ben Brown. Again, Ben, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Maybe you can filter your TikTok fans towards us.
For sure. Yeah. When you get this posted, let me know and I'll share it.
Sure thing. Keep reading, keep listening, keep watching, learn more. We'll see you guys.
See ya.